You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 23rd of November, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and this is actually pre-recorded. It's not actually live today, it's pre-recorded, but we are going out on RadioAryan.com. And of course we do have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today, this glorious afternoon? It is here actually, beautiful sunny afternoon.
Well, I'm in the bunker, so I wouldn't know. But no, I'm doing all right. I might have mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, I don't know, but there's been a lot more reaction to Communism by the Back Door, and certainly, you know, more or fresher comments are coming in praising it. So I'm really pleased about that.
Oh, you're still able to actually see some comments then?
Yeah. Well, on various other channels as well, so that's good. As well, I've got the whole complete thing in HD from start to finish in one go.
Oh, excellent. What are the sort of things people have been saying then? Is this the first time they've come across that sort of material?
Yeah, I mean, someone said this is the best documentary on the New World Order that's set up to date. And someone already seen the early one about Adolf Hitler and just connected the two and said, I think one comment said, two of the most important documents that he's seen.
Do you come across people that haven't actually seen Greatest Story Never Told, but they watch Communism by the Back Door and then they move on from that to the Adolf Hitler one?
Occasionally, yeah. I guess not everybody's aware. I mean, I don't think the actual push and the publicity for The Greatest Story Ever Told is as strong as what it first was. So there were people coming along searching for answers and possibly stumble on that one even before they come across the first one, which must be some kind of a unique way of doing it, I think.
Well, I think that's the beauty of it, because, I mean, the second one was sort of more concentrating on subjects that would appeal to conspiracy theorists, people that check out the conspiracy theory sites. They all know about the New World Order, and then they see there's a New World Order, a documentary series called New World Order, Communism by the Back Door, and I guess that would introduce them to a lot of subjects with crossover appeal that they hear talked about on their conspiracy theory websites, but they don't know is connected to the National Socialists. And I guess they don't
that's
get...
Right. That's a big problem. Yeah, because people obviously look at 9/11 and, you know, they look at it as a government inside job, but at the same time, a lot of people didn't connect. The same thing went on with Germany, you know, with the same people in government, so to speak. So, yeah, it's a great connector that way, for sure.
And they used to join in the dots. They used to not seeing things in isolation and looking for patterns. And what you're doing is pointing out these patterns that point back to what happened in World War II, which is so important. It really is. I mean, when you hear people like Anne-Marie Waters talking about the situation the world is in today, she only traces it back 70 years. She traces it back to what happened with the formation of the United Nations and the EU, but she doesn't seem to go any further than that. You know, the reason why all that was put into place and what went on before then was fighting against that. And it seems like there's like a blank spot there, you know?
Oh, definitely. But there was a spell cast, you see. So, you know, a lot of people who haven't seen the first documentary still under that spell, because the first documentary, without a doubt, breaks that spell and then leaves people to be more open-minded, and obviously get a lot of comments saying they've changed the way of thinking, changed the way of life, look at things differently. That's what that first documentary did, without a doubt.
Well, it certainly is like there's an enchantment on people. You know, people are just, you know, they don't see what's really happening right in front of their very eyes. You point it out to them. And they're just blind to it. I mean, one of the things that always really gets me is people that claim that the Bible is Jewish, Christianity is Jewish, and you think, well, think about that. Who was it that killed Christ? You know, how can you then claim that these people that killed Christ wrote the Bible? It, you know, it's not logical, is it?
E. Michael Jones talked about the same subject, a couple of days ago, I was watching a video, and he said he gets it all the time. So, you know, Christianity always is a Jewish product. And he probably actually believes Jesus was a Jew, and he still says it's rubbish. But me and you are likewise, we don't believe that Jesus was a Jew anyway, so that's even less grounds.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? I mean, even people that do think that Jesus was a Jew, that in the church, like E. Michael Jones, they know that it's an impossibility to think that Christianity is Jewish, because they're looking at it as the religious thing. And just from a religious angle, Judaism was formed 400, 500 years after Christ. That's when the Talmud was written down. That's when rabbinic Judaism was formed. You can't call the religion of the Old Testament Judaism. It was based around the temple, the sacrifices, and the priests, none of which was left after the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, which was predicted to happen, prophesied to happen, and Judaism formed after that, and it was rabbinical Judaism based around rabbis debating in synagogues. Nothing to do with the Old Testament, nothing to do with Christianity. Yeah. And totally against Christianity, in fact.
Yeah. The look at Christ as burning in hell in an excrement.
Well, they spit on the crucifix. They trample on the crucifix. They say prayers to curse Christians every day. I mean, it's a major part of the Jewish religion is to be anti-Christian. I mean, years ago, people, they didn't call them Jews. They called them Talmudists. Because of this, this confusion, they certainly never thought of the people of the Old Testament as being Talmudists.
That's right. That's right. But many people think that actually their God is Lucifer, believe it or not. I was having this discussion once, this March to Zion documentary, where they interviewed rabbis without the rabbis actually knowing the main agenda of that documentary. So they spoke openly. And at the end of it all, the conclusion was, you know, their God is the Antichrist. And when you link that with today's New World Order, a lot of people think it's just Jews. Well, those who say it's not just Jews are right in a sense, because Milner and Rhodes, in the early part of the beginnings of the New World Order, they were Satanists. And when you think, if they are Satanists, and they're linking to the Jews who presumably have been discovered to be worshipping Lucifer, there's your link. And end of the day, in Castellaria?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, yeah, oh, I thought we knocked off. No. At the end of the day, in the Talmud, it says all Goyim, even the best, must die. So, consequently, these guys who are helping them, taking the gold and turning traitor, will perish anyway, because the Jews want to rule it all themselves.
Yeah, they have their Goyish helpers. The Shabbos Goyim and the Shabbos Shiksas, particular Shabbos Shiksas at the moment, Amber Rudd and Theresa May. Amber Rudd has now just been accepted back into the government again, and obviously we see what's going on this week with their treason, selling us out to Europe. But what we wanted to really talk about today is a speech that Adolf Hitler gave, actually a proclamation that he gave about the church. Because there's all this criticism that the National Socialists were anti-Christian, that they were anti-church. And just before we actually did this program, I had a look on Wikipedia. There's an article there. I think it's called Hitler and Catholicism or something like that. And just looking through that, it's just so obvious that it's black propaganda. It's propaganda to make them look as if they were anti-Christian. And they're bringing out the names of priests that were obviously communists, that were criticizing the state, that were undermining the state. And because they were punished for that, they're claiming that the National Socialists were anti-Catholic, when we know that they weren't.
Yeah.
We very much know
that. Yeah, a lot of people fall for it. Even Bishop Williamson, said the other week he didn't believe Hitler was a Christian.
Well, yeah, this is just it, because there is so much propaganda trying to deflect people from that, to distract people from that, because they don't want people to realise that real Christianity, real Christian values, is what the National Socialist State espoused. They got rid of usury. They put the needs of the nation before the needs of the individual. And that is central to Christianity, is love your neighbor as you love yourself. And that means put the needs of your nation before the needs of the individual. Everything was based around that. They didn't use the same terminology, but it's exactly the same thing. Loving your neighbor.
Yeah.
Love your nation.
Well, I think one of the main culprits in all of this was Roosevelt, because he kind of used it as a scare tactic, saying that if the Nazis actually won, they would destroy all the churches and all religion. And this is in a speech he gave trying to get into the war.
Well, we'll see that that isn't true from this speech. This speech was actually given in 1939, January the 30th. And this is an excerpt from Hitler Reden und Proklamationen, 1932 to 1945. And this is a translation by Heather Cleary Smith. And she did this translation 2002. And you'll find it at a website called The Scriptorium. It's Winter Sonnenwend. They've actually got a lot of Hitler's speeches there and a lot of articles. And rather than read out the whole speech, I've just got the main points here that he makes. And the first one, he says, in Germany, no one has been persecuted for his religious convictions to date, nor will anyone be persecuted for them. And this shows us what the accusation was. The accusation that was being thrown against Germany was that they were locking up priests because they were Christian, which isn't true. Any priests were locked up because they were communists. Otherwise, all the priests would have been locked up. And it wasn't all the priests.
Yeah, in fact, the only Jews that were in danger of being arrested were Christ Jews, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, it's the same with the Jews. I mean, it was the subversion. If anyone was a subversive and they were trying to undermine the state and they were receiving foreign funding, then they should be locked up. It's the same as today. I mean, if you look at Russia, NGOs that are receiving foreign funding and are undermining the state, they have to register themselves as an agent of a foreign state. And in countries like Hungary, they've banned certain NGOs that are helping refugees. It's exactly the same thing that was happening here. Any people that were undermining the National Socialist state, they couldn't be tolerated because the state was made of the people, and that was undermining the people, basically.
That's right.
And there was no proof that they went after anyone for their religious beliefs. I mean, quite the opposite. They spoke about their own Christian beliefs. Hitler did, Goebbels did. All of them affirmed that Jesus Christ was an Aryan. I mean, even Rosenberg affirmed that. None of them would say that Jesus was a Jew. That was so offensive, such an offensive thing to say. And they were looking at it from the point of view that Jesus's behavior was obviously Aryan. Therefore, racially, he must have been Aryan. And they sent, I think Himmler sent a team of investigators out to the Holy Land to look at bodies from that time. And they said, well, these were Gentiles. These were white people. This was the tribe of Benjamin. So they must have been white in Galilee at that time. And obviously, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, the Orthodox priest, he comes at it from another angle, and he again says they were Greek. He says that they were culturally Greek, the people that were there at that time. The Mongolized Jews, the Canaanite Jews, they were in Jerusalem, and Jesus was in Galilee, which is, you know, it's another part of that area there.
That's right.
So you can look at it from that angle. I mean, I look at it from the angle as, well, you just have to look and read Flavius Josephus, and he tells us that 200 years before Christ, the Edomites, the Canaanites, were amalgamated with the tribe of Judah. They conquered them, and they interbred with them, and these Edomites took over Judea, and from that point on, they were known as Jews. So you got 3 points there to show that Jesus was an Aryan. He wasn't a Jew. And this was
accepted. Well, I think it was only mentioned in the 18th century in the Bible, I think.
Yeah, that's because they didn't have a letter J up until that point. It was spelled H. I remember Jerusalem was written down as Jerusalem. I'm not quite sure what the spelling was for Jews. But Flavius Josephus.
No, but there were 10, I think, over time.
Yeah, lots of different ones. Ways to say it. Flavius Josephus tells us that the word that we translate today as Jew only came into use when the remnant of the tribe of Judah returned from Babylon to the land that they'd been in before. And the land that they'd been in before was then called Judea when the Romans took over. And that was the first time that this word had ever been used. So to use it before then in the Old Testament to call Abraham a Jew or Moses a Jew or Isaac a Jew is completely wrong. This word didn't come about until 400 BC. That was the first time that this word was used. And that was a Greek word, and it's been translated today to the word Jew in about the 18th century, as you were saying there,
Dennis. That's right, yeah.
So it's entirely inaccurate to call the people before then Jews. And also because when you look at the racial makeup of today's Jews, either you don't call today's Jews Jews, or you don't call the people of the Old Testament Jews, one or the other. And because everybody calls the modern Jews, the Talmudists calls them Jews, we have to call the people of the Bible something different. So, it's best to just call them Israelites. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the way that it's done in the New Testament, because it says, beware the synagogue of Satan. Not all of Israel are Israel. So it's telling us that there were people that weren't actually Israel, that were there at the time. Not all Israel are Israel. Beware the synagogue of Satan. So it's telling us there that we shouldn't be calling them that.
Well, I think the translation above Jesus on the cross was a mistranslation of Latin as well. Didn't actually say King of the Jews, said Judea.
King of Judea, yeah. And that was mocking him as well. That wasn't saying, oh, he's a Jew. The king of Judea. Because he was the rightful king. He was of the bloodline of King David. And yet the king of Judea was King Herod, who was an Edomite. He was of ignoble birth. And the Judeans would mock him for that. And he was an incredibly evil king. He had loads of them. Loads of people he had slaughtered. All the nobles.
Firstborn.
No. When he actually died, he had thousands of noble Judeans slaughtered in the middle of a sports arena so that everybody would mourn, because he wanted people to mourn for him. He was incredible. I mean, God struck him down, and he actually had worms coming out of his genitals and a horrible stink and, a really horrific death that he actually had. It's a fantastic history to read. To read Flavius Josephus, to learn about what was going on in the Roman Empire at that time is absolutely fascinating. I do recommend people read it just to get an idea of how we used to live, how honorable people used to be, and just, you know, what bastards these Edomites were. Because what he also did. He got rid of the high priest. He murdered the high priest. He replaced the high priest with his own people. And he replaced the Pharisees with his own people. He replaced all the aristocracy with these Edomite Canaanites. Exactly the same thing that we see happening today in Western countries. All the important positions have been taken over by Jews or by people that serve Jews. And this is exactly what they did in Judea.
Well, I think we covered in communism by the back door that Freemasonry was actually started at that time. This mysterious force which they thought that Christ had, they wanted some mysterious force itself. And the first lodge was in his temple.
Yes, and we also went into that head as well, because the Templars and the Freemasons have always had this worshipping of a head. And, of course, Herod had John the Baptist, had his head, he was decapitated,
right.
Wasn't he? And they may have...
Yeah, I remember watching that film as a kid, yeah.
But the Freemasons claim to be going all the way back to Solomon and Egypt. And I guess there probably have been these secret societies that were manipulating things all along. And we know that they had Jews in these societies. I mean, the Canaanites are depicted in these Egyptian pictures. And that Canaanite nose, what we know as the Jewish nose, you can see that on the images of the Hittites. And the Hittites were the daughters of Heth, a Canaanite tribe. And you can see that nose on them. So you, this is how you can identify these Jews as Canaanites, because there are pictures of them.
Well, the Germans knew that, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, the Germans, they had their own research. I mean, things have come on a lot since then. I mean, the Germans identified the Benjaminites as being Aryan, but they still thought that the Old Testament was actually written by Jews. They didn't realize mm-hmm. that the ethnicity had changed over time, which is it's an amazing thing that they didn't pick up on it, because it is there, right yeah. there in Flavius Josephus' histories. Anyway, let's get back to this mm-hmm. speech here. Let's get back to the second point, because this is a really good one, I think. This is the second point in Hitler's speech about the church. He says, since January the 30th, 1933, the National Socialist State, acting through its official organs, has put the following public tax revenue at the disposal of the two churches during the fiscal years of 1933 onwards. 1933, 130 million Reichsmarks. 1934, 170 million Reichsmarks. 1935, 250 million Reichsmarks. 1936, 320 million Reichsmarks. 1937, 400 million Reichsmarks. 1938, 500 million Reichsmarks that was given to the church out of the public tax revenue. And he continues, added to this are the countless donations, testamentary transferences, and most of all, the revenues from church collections. What is more, in the National Socialist State, the churches enjoy various tax concessions, and where donations, bequests, etc. are concerned, they are entirely exempt from taxation. It is therefore the height of impertinence, to put it mildly, that politicians, especially from abroad, presume to allege that the Third Reich is hostile to religion. If the German churches should really regard this situation as intolerable, then the National Socialist State is ready and willing at any time to institute a clear division of church and state, such as is the case in France, America, and other countries. And I would like to ask, what sums from public revenues have the administrations of France, England, or the United States put at the disposal of their churches during the same period of time? Now, that's quite incredible, that, because I think what he's inferring there is that France, England, and America weren't giving any money from taxes to the church. They were actually taxing the church. That's certainly the state that we have today. The church pays tax on what it receives. It doesn't receive any money. I mean, this separation of church and state, that's what it is. It means that the church doesn't receive any money from the state. But the National Socialists were giving the church, I mean, look, 500 million Reichsmarks in 1 year.
Is it coincidence that he's naming France, England, and the United States, all Masonic countries who are out to destroy religion?
Good point. I think that's the point that he's making. I mean, he's not openly saying they are trying to destroy religion, but what he's saying is we most certainly are supporting the church, and you who are making this accusation, you are certainly not supporting the church. And it's incredible hypocrisy, isn't it, of America, France, and England to be making this allegation when they're not actually giving out any money at all to their churches. And think how much money that is.
Well, Churchill said something similar, didn't he? Churchill said that this war, you know, depends on the survival of the Christian civilization. When he's siding with the communists who killed 60 million Christians. Full talk.
And you would also expect, if you were giving an organization 500 million Reichsmarks, I think you have every right to expect that organization not to criticize you.
Correct.
The members of that organization not to criticize you.
What I was often thinking was, these left-wing priests, who obviously Hitler saw as criticising the Third Reich and admittedly put them in camps, what side during the Spanish Revolution were these left-wing priests, which are in every country, which side were they on fighting? Because in Spain we saw Franciscan monks with weapons fighting the Bolsheviks, but they had left-wing priests in the ranks.
They must have been traitors. They must have been traitors.
I would assume so. Yeah. Because Francis today is a left-wing Jesuit. So you put him in the Spanish Civil War and, you know, the money's on. He's going to be fighting for the church.
Well, the only people that came to the defence of the Christians that were being attacked by the Bolsheviks were the Germans and the Nationalists.
Italians, yeah.
Only the Nationalists that came to their defence. And as you pointed out so many times before, all the so-called fascist countries before World War II, they were all run by Christians. They all had Christian leadership. And it was the
claim was over that Mussolini wasn't Christian. I had to, you know, go into research about that. And he was. He started off, he may not have been when he started off, but he certainly was before the Spanish Revolution. And some say that he was non-Christian up to about maybe a year before he died. But I don't believe that at all. I think he was Christian for long before that.
Well, if you read his Doctrine of Fascism, it's very clear that he's Christian and it's promoting Christian ideas. The Doctrine of Fascism, I think it's translated by Giovanni Gentile. It's available online, and that makes it very clear that they're Christian. But I'm just amazed.
Go on. There seems to be a certain campaign to make out the fascists and especially Germany were non-Christian, and this feeds right into the pagan line. I mean, the Jews must love the pagans, because the pagans are forever saying, you know, that the Germans were not Christian. They were, in fact, lying to the public because they needed the vaults.
Well, the Jews have loved the pagans going right the way back to Julian the Apostate, you know, who got rid of Christianity and then gave the Jews all this money to rebuild their temple and said, well, me and the Jews, we worship the same God. And this is their pagan hero. He said that it was the Jewish God that he worshipped. You couldn't get any clearer than that. And obviously they got on well with the Romans. They bribed the Romans to put Herod in power. And they had these Jewish colonies full of these Canaanites in Alexandria. That's where all these spurious Gnostic gospels came from. That was Jews trying to subvert Christianity with their Gnosticism, which is where this Freemasonry comes from. So they got on just fine with pagans. And they do today. They you know, just look at the United Nations and the way that it promotes the New Age. And it promotes all these pagan ideas. That's the religion they want us to have.
Yeah, well, these pagans who claim that Christianity is, you know, a Jewish religion need to look at themselves, because what they're saying is exactly what the Jews want them to say.
You know, I say this so many times. They're just carrying out the Talmud. By attacking Christianity, they're just doing exactly what the Talmud instructs Jews to do. And they think they've been anti-Jewish by doing
it. Some National Socialist supporters that actually say Christianity was the reason that Europe has now fallen, because they say it's too weak. They're saying when you turn the other cheek, you know, this is what brought down, you know, the barriers. Whereas in reality, for 2,000 years, Christianity saved Europe from invasions of all times.
And you're only supposed to turn the other cheek to your own people. You're not supposed to turn the other cheek to the Muslims. If you look at Martin Luther's time, when he talked about the world, it was quite clear. He said, no, the whole world is Christian. Outside the world, they're not even human. They were seen as dogs. Just look at the way that the people that were writing at the time when they were fighting against the Muslims, they were dogs. They weren't even seen as human beings. They weren't people that you turn the other cheek to. They were the people. They were the enemies of God. The enemies of God are to be slaughtered at the edge of the sword. And that was what the Crusades were about. They weren't about, oh, well, let's go and try and convert them. A big mistake the church did make was trying to convert Jews. I mean, even if you believe that, that they were the people of the Old Testament, Jesus didn't even try to convert the Jews. He didn't convert the Jews. Is it what makes, you know, the people in the church think that they're going to have any luck doing that? And it was through that.
I think Michael Jones follows that example. He does say that he has converted Jews in his time, and it's a it's the thing about being Christian is to convert as many people as you can and bring the Jews back under the faith. But as we know, that's backfired on numerous occasions, as we know.
Yeah, that's the reason why we have these mistranslations of the Bible and these misunderstandings of what's in there. Because when these Jews did convert, the conversos, they were automatically given high up positions of authority in the church to try and encourage other Jews to join. And of course, once they had these high up authority positions, they could say, well, that word means this and this word means that. And they changed the whole meaning of things. I mean, to take the word Gentile, for instance, it never meant non-Jew. And yet, because of looking to these Jews and these rabbis for interpretations, we all think it means non-Jew now. It just meant nation. And I read some history books recently that was quoting works that were written when Britain was being invaded by Vikings. And all these ancient historical texts refer to the Vikings as the Gentiles. So they obviously never thought that the word Gentiles meant non-Jews.
Yep.
And they must have seen themselves as Israelites. And this is before we even had Jews in Britain. And they were referring to them as the Gentiles. And it just means nations. And it doesn't mean non-Jew. It means Israelite nations, or it means the Adamic nations. Just the nations. There's no non-Jew part of it. That complete nonsense that has come about from the Jews.
They have stolen one or two words over the years, as we know, which the original meaning is not what it's meant today. So they have made an art of it.
Well, even the word Israel is stolen by them. And that's why E. Michael Jones calls his podcast Israel. Because the church is Israel, not the Jews. Even when you look at the tribe of Judah and Benjamin, they were at war with the house of Israel. Judah was at war with Israel for a long period of time. They were two separate kingdoms, the 10 tribes of Israel and the 2 tribes of Judah. So these Jews today calling themselves Israel is, you know, it's just an insult. It's been stolen from the church.
Hijacking,
stolen from the church. Well, let's get on to Adolf Hitler's point number 3. He says, the National Socialist State has neither closed a church nor obstructed any religious service, nor influenced the form in which a religious service was held. It has not influenced the teachings nor the creed of any denomination whatsoever. In the National Socialist State, everyone is free to find his salvation in whichever way he chooses. And what he means there is there was no bias between Protestantism or Catholicism. He wasn't saying people could become Muslims. You know, it was just seen that Christianity was the only religion there was. And then he continues, however, clergy who believe that they see their mission not in being the servants of God, but rather in slandering our present state, its institutions or its leaders, will find themselves sternly reminded by the National Socialist State that a destruction of this state will not be tolerated by anyone, and that if they step outside the bounds of the law, members of the clergy will be held just as accountable for their actions under the law as any other German citizen. So that's what we were saying, isn't it? I mean, everybody should be equal under the law, regardless of if they're clergy. And that makes it clear that there were members of the clergy that were trying to undermine the state. That's the allegation that's being made there. They don't actually mention any individuals, but that's
not what I do in the Secret Masonic Victory. I mentioned 2 or 3.
Can you recall what they were up to?
Not off the top of my head, no. I was looking up, but they are in the end, and pictures.
Well, this is what we were saying earlier, wasn't it? That they would be punished for undermining the state. Number 4, the National Socialist State is neither prudish nor dishonest, but there are certain moral principles, adherence to which is in the interest of the biological health of a people, and which we therefore will not permit to be undercut. Pederasty and crimes against children are punished as criminal offences in this state, regardless of who commits these crimes. 5 years ago, when some leading figures in the National Socialist Party committed these crimes, they were executed. When other public or private individuals or clergymen commit the same offences, They are punished with jail or prison terms. We take no interest in clergymen's transgressions against their own vows of chastity, etc., and our media has never published anything on this subject. So what he's pointing out there is that the National Socialists themselves are disciplined far more harshly than the clergy for these crimes, yeah, because they're setting an example. The National Socialists are trying to set a good example. So if any of them are found to be abusing children, they are executed. But they're not saying that anybody else is executed. That makes me think about that allegation that that we talked about last week about the National Socialists executing the pedophiles at the children's home. It was accusation that they were executing Freemasons just for being Freemasons.
Channel Islands.
Yeah, I'm not so sure they would have been executing people for these things because they executed their own people. I mean, even Himmler says that, doesn't he? When he's given that speech about homosexuality to the SS, and he says if any SS man is caught doing that, he will be executed. But any member of the public does that,
yeah,
he will be imprisoned.
And that's because of the Christian vow they took.
Yeah, and you know, the sense that they needed to be the very best of the best. They needed to hold themselves to a higher accountability than the general public because they wanted to set a good example.
That's why the SS suffered more than anybody after the war, because obviously they knew what the SS... You couldn't brainwash an SS guy, for sure, because they actually knew right down to the bones what that war was all about. That's why they suffered more than anybody.
Yeah, it's terrible defamation that's gone on of the SS. And when you think about it, these vows that they took, they were to be the new aristocracy. They were to really be noble people, really good people. And they've just been slandered as just these barbaric butchers of Jews when they were real gentlemen. Real gentlemen that knew the rules of chivalry and knew that they needed to keep a high standard of morality and set the best example they can to people. They were the highest point of National Socialism, the cutting edge.
These were warrior priests, in a way. They were based on the knights, you know, back in the day of the Catholic knights, which protected Europe on many occasions.
And
Teutonic knights.
Yeah, Teutonic knights that protected the church. The interesting part of this bit is this piece that Adolf Hitler just spoke here was about where he's talking about the biological health of the people, where he says there are certain moral principles, adherence to which is in the interest of the biological health of a people, and which we will therefore not permit to be undercut. Now, that's talking about racial health, racial hygiene.
Yeah. Well, it's not only that. I was watching a video only last night, which was on a channel. It was a German headline. I stumbled across it. And what it was showing was how the Germans felt that, you know, even in the playtime at school, you know, they should be thinking about the leaders, what are helping them through what they call that depression of being under the Weimark. And it showed these girls keeping fit and exercising. And when I thought about what the situation is today over here with the McDonald's and all this kind of carry on, there wasn't one overweight girl there. They were all, well, it was heartbreaking to watch, to be honest. They were unbelievably fit, you know.
Well, he took great care of the individual health and the health of the nation. And this is the thing where he's talking about the biological health of the nation. It's the same as an individual, in the same way that an individual should be healthy and exercise and not eat the wrong foods. The nation itself should try to keep itself healthy. It should not tolerate miscegenation. It shouldn't tolerate interbreeding because that will contaminate the nation and bring it down. It will stop being a white nation. And also, if you've got people with congenital diseases that are going to be passing on things like blindness diseases and conditions where people are in constant pain or mentally retarded. Yeah. You know, you don't want that to grow. You want to stop that. You want people that have those conditions, you want to encourage them to have voluntary sterilization. And that will protect the nation. I mean, they could always adopt children that didn't have these diseases. That's what they were encouraged to do. That's what he's talking about there, about the biological health of a people. And I can't see how mm-hmm. that goes against Christianity, because man is created in the image of God. And unless you're going to say that God is mentally disabled and physically disabled, then these people aren't in the image of God. And they're almost like a mockery of God. And it's a great tragedy that they exist. And if there was a way of preventing children from being born like that, then it should be done so that the children that are born are guaranteed to be born into a good body and a good brain, functioning and healthy. Because that's what it means. That's totally what it would agree. Mean. It would totally mean agree. That there would be a right of a child to be born into a healthy, functioning body. And everything possible would be done to ensure that that took place. That would be better for the individual, and that would be better for the nation. And that's not unchristian. That doesn't contradict
in a way. It's a cruel to be kind type of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think there were allegations.
When it's right, it's right.
Well, there were allegations later on about this euthanasia. And a lot of that was to do with the war and then not having enough money to keep these people alive. And when you've got people that are seriously ill and they're not mentally there, they're not physically there, and their carers say, well, there is no quality of life here, then, euthanasia is a blessing for these people. That they're not having to exist any longer like that. I mean, it's like when they switch off life support machines now. So you had two things going on there. You had people, carers, that were saying, well, our child doesn't have any quality of life and it would be better for it to be put off. And you also had a situation where they were short of medicine, they were short of staff, they were short of funds near the end of the war, and they just couldn't afford to keep some of these people going, which is a tragedy. But the health of the nation, once again, that is putting the needs of the nation before the needs of the individual, isn't it?
Well, in peacetime, I mean, they've been criticised, obviously, by the Allies. But in peacetime, what they used to do with if a family member was suffering from incurable pain or lived a standard of life no higher than a vegetable, then the family members could appeal to the courts to say that, you know, the life must be ended. And even then, another series of rounds of court before it was finally decided whether it was carried on. It wasn't just a question of, yeah, kill him. You know, it was meticulously done to make sure that everything was up to press.
It had to be checked out by separate doctors and...
That's right.
These checks and balances in place so that it was all done legally. And it wasn't like it was just Germany that was involved in things like this. America was doing this as well. They were sterilizing people. And you've even got a situation.
After the war.
Yeah. You've got a situation where crime runs in families. Certain genes will predispose people to a life of crime, and they also seem to breed a lot more than the people that don't commit crimes. This was results of science at the time discovered this. So again, what they did was they would sterilize these criminals from long lines of criminal families and people that had problems with alcohol, people that were alcoholics, because none of that is good for the hygiene of the nation. And I don't know if they would be forced to go through that. I know that it's suggested that people were given rewards for accepting sterilization. And that goes on today. There's a black woman, an American woman, that goes around the world offering junkies and crackheads money if they will get sterilized. because so many of them produce children that just grow up to have no quality of life and just carry out crimes. So that still goes on today.
Yeah, can I just say this is from the research that I sometimes keep on the shelf. It says here in Germany, if a person was thought to be in a condition where life was intolerable or vegetated, euthanasia was practiced under extremely strict conditions, not without a court ruling. Hitler's decree of October 1939, typed on his personal stationery, backdated to September the 1st, enlarged the authority of certain physicians to be designated by name in such a manner that persons who, according to human judgment, are incurable can, upon a most careful diagnosis of their condition of sickness, be accorded a mercy death. But the propaganda was that bad that even the Americans after, and the British after World War II, dissociated from the word euthanasia.
Yeah, it says mercy killing there, and incurable, it mentioned there as well. I think what they did after the war, they just latched on to anything they could and exaggerated it and tried to make out that it was absolutely terrible and wicked and evil to justify what they did to Germany, to justify just destroying Europe. They had to come up with something, so they came out with stories of gassings of Jews, euthanasia, killing lots of people, all this stuff that isn't actually physically possible, just to excuse their own behaviour. And a lot of it was projection.
I've got some dates here. In 1998, US state of Oregon legalises assisted suicide. 2000, the Netherlands legalises euthanasia. 2002, Belgium legalises euthanasia. 2008, the US state of Washington legalises assisted suicide, and California became the sixth US state to allow euthanasia. I think California was actually fined as well for mispractice at one point.
Well, there are actually lots of things that the rest of the world took on after Germany first started them. The welfare state, the state providing benefits, that was first started by Germany. Clean Air Act, that was first started by Germany and then continued by other countries after the war. Even the decoupling of the banking system from the gold standard, which, of course, we now have everywhere, that was started by Germany. That was what the war was about, was that the Germans were in control of that. Not the bankers.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to his fifth and final point here. Now, if foreign countries and particularly certain democratic statesmen speak up so strongly for individual German priests, the reason can only be a political one. For these same statesmen remained silent when hundreds of thousands of clergy were massacred or burned in Russia, and they remained silent when tens of thousands of priests and nuns were brutally butchered or burned alive in Spain. They could not deny these facts, but they remained and continue to remain silent, while, and I cannot but point this out to the democratic statesmen, these massacres prompted numerous national socialists and fascists to put themselves voluntarily at General Franco's disposal in order to help prevent this Bolshevik blood frenzy from being spread further across Europe and thus from being visited upon the majority of civilized mankind. It was the concern for European culture and for true civilization that prompted Germany to side with nationalist Spain in its battle against its Bolshevik destroyers. It is a sad indicator of the mentality prevailing in various countries that taking action for such unselfish motives seems to be inconceivable there. But National Socialist Germany participated in General Franco's revolt solely with the sincere wish that he might succeed in saving his country from a danger which Germany herself once almost succumbed to. Therefore, sympathy or pity for persecuted servants of God cannot be what prompted the democratic citizens' interest in individual clergymen who have come into conflict with the law in Germany. Rather, it is the interest of the enemy of the German state. In this regard, it is important to note the German priest acting as servant of God enjoys our protection, but the priest acting as political enemy of the German Reich will be rooted out. We believe that this is the best way to prevent a development which, as experience has shown in the case of Spain, may otherwise necessitate countermeasures of unforeseeable extent in the future. And there couldn't be better evidence than this, could there? That these Germans unselfishly went over there and gave their lives to defend the priests in Spain, while America and England just sat back and watched.
Yeah. I cover it in the Spanish Revolution. And what people don't realise, probably, but what is true now was sourced, was the fact that the bankers, because they'd conquered Russia in 1919, they owned the Soviet Union, and they were funding the revolution, the communists, through the Soviet Union so that they could keep Auschwitz secretly. And so the same people who's criticising Germany now were actually funding the overthrow of the church in Spain. How crazy does it get?
Well, it makes it quite clear what was going on there as well. I mean, brutally butchered, burned alive, hundreds of thousands of clergy massacred, tens of thousands of priests and nuns.
Yep.
Yeah, just like the French Revolution. But the point is, I mean, what we've got here, you've got the enemies of Germany latching on to a few individuals that have been charged with crimes against the state and making a big fuss about it, while they completely overlook these horrific crimes that were going on to members of the church elsewhere. Total hypocrisy.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't realise that as soon as the Spanish Revolution finished, it was only a matter of months before World War II started. And looking into that recently, about the Polish situation, I'm convinced that was a trap, because they knew, because of the Germans' minorities in Poland suffering as it was, and even deaths, that Hitler, the longer it went on, Hitler had to invade. And it all stems from the Spanish Revolution failing. And if you remember, Stalin was on the borders of Europe, ready to invade Europe at one point, and I'll guarantee you he would have gone into Spain, even though Spain had just declared a neutral side.
Well, the same as what went on in Spain when the Germans went there and selflessly laid down their lives to save their Spanish brothers from communism. They did the same thing for the whole of Europe when they went into the USSR and went up to Stalingrad.
Which is the reason why they won't confirm Stalin waiting on the borders, because if they have to confirm Stalin was about to invade, that makes Hitler the saviour of Europe. And they don't want that one.
Well, he was the saviour of Europe. If it wasn't for that Operation Barbarossa and all the Waffen-SS units from all the other European countries, the whole of Europe would have been under the communist thumb.
Yeah,
there wouldn't have been
that is a fact.
Iron Curtain. Yeah. This is the thing that, I mean, our regular listeners know this, but if there are new listeners listening to the show, that they may not be aware that there were Waffen-SS units from all the countries of Europe. There was even one from Britain, where nationalists volunteered to go and fight against the communists on the Eastern Front. Incredibly brave people to save the rest of Europe from this. From this same fate happened in Spain and happened in Russia.
Well, there was three, I think, the Jews had taken over three press outlets. I think one may have been Reuters, but I can't remember the other two. And so I've always said it, there's been a blackout of news coming out of Europe at that time, just like there was down in South Africa when the Boer War was going on. They got that down to a T. So anything, any news, what came out of Europe was what they wanted people to hear. And consequently, people like John Amery and others over here were obviously in the better position to know what was going on and knew the situation and volunteered services to go fight the communists. But the actual news coming out was either blocked or distorted.
Yeah, it wasn't like today where we can find out the news from other countries by looking on the internet. There was nothing. Have radio. They did send out radio signals. And I think Charlie and His Orchestra was the name of the band that they had that used to play these jazz songs with funny lyrics poking fun at Churchill. But the actual the German radio station that was aimed at Britain, that was in English, I think something like a third of Britain actually tuned into that when it was on.
I believe so, yeah.
And that would have been the only chance they had to hear what was really going on. And I do think, you know, the British people really didn't want to be going to war. So many of them were locked up under Regulation 18B and held in prison. And then once the war started, you know, they had to fight for their country, but they really didn't want to go to war. And at the end of the war, Churchill lost his place as Prime Minister, which shows you that the British public were not happy. They didn't see this as, well, as much of a victory.
Well, a million marched against the Iraq War, but it didn't help. You know, when they decided to go to war, they decided to go to war. And unfortunately, everybody's in a position where they have to follow the rule and or, you know, face the consequences.
This is the only time.
Marching doesn't really help.
This is the only time there's ever been any real resistance to the New World Order was the National Socialist State and the other nationalist states that formed around it. But that was the main one. That was the real success.
You have been demonized.
Completely. Well, the truth is finally coming out now. Truth will always come out in the end.
I think it is, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Dennis.
Oh, quick.
yeah, we were race past today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget that we do require donations to keep Radio Aryan going, and we do have a Bitcoin wallet at the bottom of every article and in the sidebar of the site. And donations are gratefully received. If you can't afford to donate, then think about dropping a line to one of our prisoners of war, one of the nationalists that are in prison for putting stickers up or for standing up and speaking about nationalist issues. It really does make their day when they receive a letter. Of course, we've got Christmas coming up, so you can always buy them a Christmas card and send that off to them. And we'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you all have a great weekend ahead of you.
To Radio Aryan.